It's time for Windows Weekly, another crack in the Wintel Alliance. Paul and Mary Jo will talk about that. No new builds for Windows 10, but we'll a little preview of what's coming. And we'll look at Bing and Cortana better together. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 464, recorded Wednesday, May 4th, 2016. Caradigm Shift. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/windows. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidate fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/windows. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to BlueApron.com/TWiT. That's BlueApron.com/TWiT. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest news from Microsoft with Mary Jo Foley, the star of AllAboutMicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. And joining us now for a very special appearance, it's Ant-Man, a.k.a. Yep. Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com. He's wearing, for those of you listening today, some odd eye gear.
Yeah, but it has positional sound, so even if you can't see it, you do get the benefit.
Oh, actually, I believe he's wearing a HoloLens. Is that the case?
If you thought Google Glass was annoying, let me tell you. You see someone walking down the street with these things, you're either in Arizona somewhere or it might be a HoloLens.
So is this the developer edition? Is this your actual personal property?
So this belongs to Raphael.
Okay.
He actually owns two of them, by the way.
Ah, wow. Well, why?
Yeah. You know, sometimes you just have money burning a hole in your pocket.
Extra $3,000 just lying around.
Sure. Yeah. Well, no, he's a Windows internalist guy. He's going to rip one of these.
He's going to take one apart. Is this, have you used it? Is this kind of, how does this compare to the demos you've received up to this point?
I have actually not used this since I've been here, but they haven't changed. I mean, this is, you know, what we used.
The first thing I
do. They had a build, but they had it in December. It hasn't changed.
All right. We have now the Oculus Rift, and we got the HTC Vive a couple of days ago.
Yep.
Really enjoying playing games.
I did spend about an hour with Oculus Rift yesterday. He also, that's behind
me somewhere.
What do
you think of that?
Somewhere. I got to tell you, first of all, these things are expensive, right? But if you have an Android phone or an iPhone, you can get Google Cardboard for $25-ish.
Right.
And you should. Because some of that's, it's sort of like starter VR.
Right.
But there's some neat stuff in there. And this obviously takes it to the next level. And I've also tried, what's the Samsung? Raphael has
The Gear VR.
And I've tried that too.
That's essentially Cardboard. It's not so different. Yeah.
Yeah. But the Oculus, there's a lot of promise to it. I right now, when I go through the demos, I go through some of the games. What I envision are things like, you know, for the future, a Call of Duty VR, where you're in a multiplayer game with other people also doing VR, and I it's impossible not to imagine this. But some of the more exciting stuff is some of the almost simpler things. Like there's a Vietnam thing in one of the demos where you go through, you're on a boat in low water, and you go by the homes that are on stilts and everything, and it's you know, you look around and you can see the sky and it's like you're there. And I was saying to him, you know, if they just made one of these where it's an hour in a Paris cafe and you can look around and people come and go and they buy coffee and they, you know, the street sounds and everything. And I'd spend afternoons just doing that. It's amazing. I mean, it's going to it's going to open up the world, I think, to people who can't travel in that case, and open up all kinds of educational experiences in other cases, and obviously entertainment experiences. It's really, really cool. I think it's great.
I agree. I want to, I mean, you know, I'm so hesitant to say that because I don't want to be a sucker. You know, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the guy who said, wow, this photosynth is going to change everything.
Well, but photosynth and things like that are steps down this path. And you know, Oculus is a step down the path, too. Right. I mean, obviously, I don't have it on me, but you can kind of see it over my shoulder there. It's as big and in many ways as heavy as this thing is. It's not a mainstream consumer product, right? It's heavy on the demoware at this point. It's not a proof of concept. It's beyond that. But it's not fully realized.
Right.
But you can see that it will be. And obviously, the prices have to come down. You need a honking PC to buy, you know, to use that, as you know. The size of the device needs to come down, that kind of thing. But it's real, right? I mean, it's literally not real, I guess. But you can tell that this is happening. It's there. Whereas with HoloLens, I feel it's a little further.
As soon as you sign on, the first thing I thought is this happening?
Yeah.
And
well, you know what I like about it, by the way? So with Oculus, of course, and other VR things, you're insulated from the outside world. So it encompasses everything, right? And, you know, you get this kind of immersive 360.
It can be a little scary. Yes, a couple of nights ago, I was stayed late at the office doing the Vive. And I was in a dungeon, and I was really engaged in what I was looking at. And the Vive lets you move around. And somebody tapped my shoulder, and I jumped because I had headphones on. I had no.
And by the way, you jump from this, you know, the positional sound stuff is incredible, but also you can, like, a dinosaur darts at you.
No, I'm saying a real person tapped my shoulder.
No, I know, but you can also.
I didn't know they were sneaking up on me.
Well, I had that experience playing Doom with headphones on.
That's
in 1993-ish.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's you can really get immersed in these things. And I just see the exciting possibility there with VR in particular. And like, again, if you've not experienced this at all, get a Google Cardboard. It's the cheapest, easiest way to do it. And there's some really neat stuff. You know, even something as simple as a still frame, just a still photo. So you're standing in a place and you can look around in 360 degrees, turn around in space. Really cool. The Street View stuff from Google, where you just kind of navigate down the street haltingly like you used to in dungeon games from 25 years ago. Really cool. But there are immersive environments as well, games, really neat stuff. So it's cool. It's fun. It's futuristic and it's fun.
But HoloLens is kind of a qualitatively different experience, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's still amazing in its own right. I mean, again, the fundamental achievement to HoloLens to me is something that might not be obvious to anyone who's not used it, but it's the ability of the holograms to stick to the surfaces on which they are virtually appearing, right? So if there's a hologram ball on the table in front of me and you kind of move around it and dart around, it never jitters or moves a little bit or slides. It's rock solid right on that thing. And that is amazing. And of course, you know, HoloLens is constrained by the male side view and all that. We all know that. But that stuff can only get better. And they've kind of nailed the basics, which of course is the important bit. And that's important for the future as well, because you see how well that works and you sort of know that this will work. Like they are going to get this right. It's right there.
Do you feel better about it than you did when you used the Kinect initially? Like, do you think there's a bigger chance of them getting it right? I know that's kind of a hard thing to measure, but because to me, a lot of this feels like Kinect again.
It is. So, by the way, I would say that they are in exactly the same place. The difference is that the hologram stuff, the HoloLens stuff, is far more impressive and has far more far-reaching possibilities. I think the weirdest thing about Kinect, looking back on it years later, is that the thing that is best about it today, especially in Xbox One, is the voice control, which has nothing to do with it mapping your body and you moving around. Yeah. I just think there are limited use cases for that stuff. Whereas with HoloLens, there are a lot of them are niche kind of vertical uses, but they're still pretty exciting, right? A lot of them, you know, you've done this stuff, the Mars stuff, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. The science stuff, the educational stuff is amazing, you know. Okay, so this is like carrying my 16-year-old.
It's hard looking at you right now.
I know. It's like the weight of a child on my head.
It's like, you could take it off. You don't have to leave it on. I was trying to torture you for a while. But
I know.
But he's not. It does raise an interesting point. I mean, you can see with it, so you're not. Oh, no.
Right. You can see us. We can see.
I had the Oculus on. I had like the raccoon line.
The Vive comes with like an extra liner for narrow faces.
Yeah. I won't need that.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I only get 90 degrees of view because of my head.
Well, good. I have to say, I don't want to be. I feel like I'd hate to be a cheerleader for a new technology, but I do feel like this is genuine, and
Yeah. Well, listen, Leo. First of all, you're not a cheerleader, right? I mean, I think. How do I say this? Hopefully, I know in your case, and hopefully in my case, been around long enough, seen enough things that when you get excited about something, it's legitimately exciting. You know, I think it's easy to get really blasé about everything, like I've seen it before, blah, 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 whatever. I mean, like this stuff is really, it really is. It's going to be transformative. It's really neat.
Woohoo! You
know, I mean, it's no portable media center, but it's pretty good.
All right.
It's no portable media center.
I love it.
That was for the three people who would get that joke. Okay.
I just was like, oh, no.
It's no smart display. How about this one? It's no Zune, but it's pretty good.
Well, it's also
no brown Zune.
Unlike those four things, it's not from one company. This is going to be, everybody's jumping in on this.
Yes.
Well, we haven't seen Apple's yet, but they've got a big team working on it. We haven't seen really anything but Google Glass from Google, but they've got a huge team working on it.
Google I.O. is coming up this month. Next week is Apple's show. Also in June is E3. And Microsoft, we know, is going to release some new hardware. We don't know what that is. It could be nothing. It could be a controller, and we'll all, you know, hate each other for that. But I really think that Microsoft needs to get into VR, and I really think that Xbox One is the way to do it. I have my own sort of conspiracy theories about a next-gen Xbox One, sort of like the PlayStation 4.5, that's going to be more powerful and be able to do 4K and be able to do VR. And we don't have this in the notes, but there was a Microsoft video that was put on today about augmenting VR with rings of LED lights that simulate peripheral vision. Very interesting that Microsoft would be working on VR, right? there's something they're trying to do to augmented reality as well, and that might have implications for HoloLens, but HoloLens is restricted by a very small vertical viewport, whereas VR is not. And if you think about how peripheral vision works, Raphael and I were just talking about this morning, if you look over there and see something moving and then you start looking forward, you're still aware of the thing moving. You're not really looking at it. It's not focused.
Your actually acuity, we know, is not very good at all. Our brain.
I'm talking about in real life. I mean, in real life.
Your acuity. Yeah.
Your brain fills in gaps.
Your brain is filling it in. You don't really have much visual acuity outside of a very.
But it works, right?
But it works because your brain.
Yeah, your brain's ability to fill in gaps is actually why we're still here. It's the reason we saw tigers in the grass and all that kind of stuff. But this technology emulates that, and it's very interesting, and it does it with lights. And so if there's a kind of a red ball, let's say, bouncing, and then you turn, there's a red light bouncing, and it fools your brain into the same thing. And so, yeah, so in your mind, it's still over there bouncing, and it's still holding its place. You retain its position and how it interacts with things in your world. And first of all, that's interesting in its own right. It's worth watching, by the way, the video they have. But it suggests to me that Microsoft as a company is also working on VR in ways that maybe we weren't or still aren't aware of. And hopefully, there's no way to know, but hopefully we'll hear something about that at E3 next month.
You know, I mean,
well, don't they have VR partnerships with a couple companies, right? They Oculus, Steam, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, but I mean, that's almost like we don't have anything, so we partner. when you don't have your own solution, it's like, well, Oculus Rift relies on Windows PCs, so there's a natural partnership. But Oculus Rift is expensive, and it requires really expensive PCs. If you could have a sub-$500 Xbox One and a $100 to $200 VR peripheral, it's not game changing per se, but it puts them in the game and it puts them into a nice pricing category, which by the way, Sony will be in as well with the PS4.
All right. Well, this wasn't even on the menu, but you did.
No, but it's worth
wear those weird glasses. So,
I put the Oculus Rift on, but then I couldn't see you.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I think I'm cautious about it is because this technology really isn't new, and in many ways, there's nothing new here except that it's gotten less expensive and more kind of consumer friendly.
The graphics quality is better.
Stuff I saw in an SGI, a Silicon Graphics Onyx in 1993 was pretty good.
Sure. Yeah, when the Oculus Rift developer version went out a couple of years ago, right, what you were looking at was sort of an Unreal technology.
It's much better than that. It's much better than the DK1.
So it's gone from kind of video game graphics to interactive video. which is very interesting. And then obviously there are Pixar-type cartoon graphics. There are video game-type graphics. But it's interactive. It's, you know, the higher quality. You know, the experience is going to vary from app to app. I mean, I think for now we're still waiting for the, you know, the first killer, amazing interactive experience. But it's there. I mean, it's all there. It's waiting to happen.
It's been my experience, having done it a little bit, that there's some pretty compelling stuff already that convinced me that, oh, okay, I see the value of this.
We talked, this is a couple of months ago, probably in January. I mentioned a game called Firewatch, which is out for Windows PCs and for the PS4. And there's a demo in the Oculus Rift that graphically looks, it's basically the same thing. It's like a night, it's night in the forest, and it's kind of, it's not really interactive beyond the fact you can look around. But I see that, and I think they could easily implement that game, which is a fantastic game with a great narrative, as an Oculus Rift title. And that's how we get there, right? You kind of move from sort of a screen-based game to a VR-based game, and then into fast-moving environments, multiplayer-type stuff, photorealistic graphics, and eventually it just becomes literally what we, virtual reality like you would see in a movie. I just want to walk around Paris without having to get on a plane. Is that too much to ask?
Yeah.
It seems like that should be possible.
We're still a long way off, though, from a full sensory experience. You can't touch, really. Hear, you get hearing and sight, basically, and kind of a constrained version of both.
But cafe sounds, street sounds.
Yeah, you can.
The visual stuff, I could hold a cup of coffee. Yeah, I could drink the cup of coffee.
You can suspend belief enough so that it's pretty vivid. And as I said, I jumped when somebody tapped me on the shoulder because I thought I was in a dungeon.
You're lost.
You know?
You were lost in that game.
Lost in that game, yeah.
That's how you know it's working. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. Mary Jo Foley will have something to say about the other stuff.
I might.
Paul and I just...
By the way, Mary Jo's voice appears to be back.
Yeah.
Yes,
it is. Yay, you sound great, by the way. Yeah.
I sound like myself, finally.
That's my turn. when we come back, Mobilegeddon, Windows 10, Server, Cloud, and more. A show today brought to you by a brand new sponsor. I want to welcome Rocket Mortgage to the show. If you've ever bought a house, you know how painful this process. And by the way, it feels like it's an 18th century process. Faxing paperwork, going in and signing things, signing lots of things. It's crazy. It feels like it's more for their benefit than yours. By the way, if you haven't borrowed to buy a house in the last few years, after the banking crisis, the paperwork's gotten even more insane. And it's like it's an adversarial process. I got a better way. Very happy to welcome Rocket Mortgage to TWIT. They bring the mortgage process into the 21st century. You can do it entirely online. Hallelujah! You don't need to buy a fax machine. Rocket Mortgage. It comes from Quicken Loans. It's fast, it's powerful, it's completely online. It's taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. So you don't have to search through stacks of old files and paperwork. You could share your bank statements, your pay stubs, with literally the click of a mouse, helping you to get approved very fast. And because they're using computers to do this, they can custom tailor a mortgage to your situation. This is so great. With Rocket Mortgage, you could do all this on your smartphone or your tablet, as well as on your computer. It is a quick online process you can manage from the convenience of your couch. And, before you buy a house, the best thing you could do, go to Rocket Mortgage, get pre-approved, get the paperwork started. That makes you much more attractive to the seller. Trust me, I know. I've sold a few homes. If you're looking to refinance, and I've bought a few, and next time I'm definitely doing it this way. If you're looking to refinance your mortgage, if you're looking to buy a home, Rocket. Rock, remember the Rocket. Rocket Mortgage. QuickenLoans.com/windows. So they know you heard it here. QuickenLoans.com/windows. They're an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org number 3030. I don't know why I have to say that, but that's the legalese we have to append. Thank you, Rocket Mortgage, for your support of Windows Weekly. Rocket Mortgage. At quickenloans.com/windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking about Windows. And You know, I think it, even though this is a Microsoft show, it's always been Wintel, right? It's always been Microsoft plus Intel. And some say as Microsoft goes, so goes Intel. Intel is not doing well right now.
What are you trying to say, Leo?
If I were Intel, I would blame... I think they do blame Microsoft giving away Windows 10. They say, well, that then nobody bought... That's why the PC market is down. Of course, if the PC market is down, Intel's down. But you can also blame Intel because they never made a mobile chip that worked. You know, nobody wanted the M-scale processor. Apparently, they had an opportunity in 2007 to do a processor for the new iPhone and declined. A little bit of an error there.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just see how that one does in the market before
the
we...
chickens are coming home to roost.
Yep.
12,000 employees, 11,000 employees are going to fire.
Intel is having exactly the same problem that Microsoft has, right? That it's that all of their money was made in the PC industry, and now things are changing. And they're going through this phase where they're trying to adapt. Like Microsoft, they invested, I think I saw something on, I don't know if it was Recode or Bloomberg or something, where they had invested several or $10 billion in mobile over a period of a few years and just weren't able to make any headway. You know, Microsoft's problems in this market are well documented, Windows Phone, Windows RT, et cetera. But of course, you know, Intel has the same issue. So when you look out at the mobile phone space, you see ARM processors and nothing else.
Yep.
This is what happens. So, Mary Jo, yep.
Well, it's funny because...
what he said.
Yep.
You know, all week, everybody's been asking both Paul and I, so what does this mean for Surface Phone? And I think that's really interesting that people are asking us that because I never heard from any of my sources that Microsoft was even thinking of using Intel in Surface Phone.
And therein lies the problem. So the latest news is that Intel's killed the two phone platforms it was working on.
Right. Right. But I think from everything we've heard about rumors around Surface Phone, we thought it was going to be ARM-based, not Intel-based.
Well, that's the problem, exactly. Nobody in their right mind would make an Atom-based phone.
Right.
Well,
right.
Okay. I mean, it's Intel's problem. 2 hours battery life, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's Intel's problem, not Microsoft's problem.
Not Microsoft's problem. They're doing the intelligent thing.
Right.
When we were at the HP event where they announced that Elite X3 phone, right, which is the Windows phone that's coming out this late this summer. And, of course, you know, I talked to the guy in charge of this project and part of that business or whatever, and I said, Windows phone? I mean, really? I mean, why? And he says, look, you know, we went to Android first, obviously. They were surprised to find that Google wouldn't work with them on the manageability and security functionality that they needed. They even went to Apple and were not surprised that Apple had zero interest in working with them. And, you know, Windows Phone presents this kind of familiar Microsoft experience from those perspectives, security and manageability. And, of course, what they had to overcome was that app compatibility thing. Of course, my next question was, well, if you're going to go Windows Phone, I mean, why not x86? And he said that Intel, this is before they canceled this stuff, was years away from shipping a viable chipset for phones. It just was not viable. And at the time, I thought that really cast doubt on what I now refer to as the fan fiction of this notion that Surface Phone will be available in some kind of x86 version, especially initially. It's a good idea in theory because, of course, if you can get Windows desktop apps on the phone, it's not that you'd run iTunes on a tiny screen, but rather that you could dock the thing and then run it on a big screen, and that would make plenty of sense. It's a good idea, assuming that those Intel chips work appropriately, and they don't. So... you know, a Surface Phone, if it happens, is going to have to work like the Elite X3. It's going to have to be ARM-based, and it's going to have to run Windows desktop applications remotely using some remote desktop-type technology, either locally or from a data center or whatever. It's going to have to be the same type of solution.
And you know what? Microsoft wants that. Why do they want that? It's another way to get people to use their cloud and to charge them a subscription, right?
Yeah. No, that's a fair point. It's not this isn't a big loss for Microsoft in many ways.
No.
Although it doesn't help them in that part of the market where they really do poorly, which is consumers. Because consumers can't take advantage of this unless Microsoft is the one offering access to Windows applications as a service. I mean, you could almost imagine Office 365 in particular. It'd be very interesting if they could make and why couldn't they make AppV type remote accessible versions of the full 2016 desktop apps available to Windows Phone plus Continuum. Like, why couldn't they do that?
Yeah, I think they will do that, and I think it'll be a business play. Because if you're a consumer, you could argue, do you really need every single bell and whistle in Excel? Or is the UWP right. version of Excel enough for you? So yeah. I think their strategy is going to be, hey, we're going to give you this one for free if you can use the UWP app and want to use that. But if you want to get the full-fledged version and run
maybe
that
an
version,
additional...
right, you pay for the subscription.
Okay.
That's my guess.
By the way, that's an excellent guess. And but, you know, it's interesting because when people say things like that that are logical and make sense, they get repeated. And then that becomes the source of the Surface X86 phone, right? In other words,
it does.
You and I and other people in the past have said, you know, this would make plenty of sense if they could figure it out. And now Surface Phone becomes X86 because enough people sort of voice this opinion that it sounds like a great idea. Mm-hmm. We have no inside information about this. This is just speculation. It's conjecture. Right. It's logical thinking.
Yeah.
But things don't always work out like that. And that's why I think of it as fan fiction. It's kind of turned the page. It's like a different kind of thing. It's not, you know, some people are suggesting or some people think that this makes sense. It's like Surface Phone's going to be X86. It's like, yikes, Surface Phone might not even happen, guys, let alone be X86.
Although, you know, we did have a little kind of hint from Terry Myerson in that memo that he sent out recently saying that Microsoft was still committed to Windows 10 Mobile. He said very explicitly in that memo, we're committed to delivering Windows 10 Mobile on mobile devices running ARM processors.
Yeah, but yes, but...
So to me, that's like, hey, we didn't say the Intel word, you know?
But he also didn't say the phone word.
No, he did not.
And it's possible, you know, Microsoft, their stated strategy is that they basically are stepping away from phone hardware, at the very least limiting it dramatically over time. And that what they want is their partners to step up to the plate and be the ones that come out with the phones. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
I think you and I have both heard, and I've heard it again recently, that they are building phones.
Oh, yeah. No, I very, very explicitly.
They're building them. Yes. The question is, will they bring them to market? They're building them at Microsoft.
Well, building them at like a little guy in the corner with a toolkit is building a phone. Are they cranking out?
No, I think bigger than that. But
thousands? Millions?
Remember that, that what used to be the Lumia team is now folded into Surface. And so there's a Surface team. If those folks come out with a phone in the future, it will almost certainly be branded as a Surface something.
Right.
You know, that's where the term Surface phone comes from. I know for a fact that I haven't heard an update on this in months, but were working on phones, you know?
Right.
What form they may take, whether they're actually released, I've never heard anything again, you know?
Yep.
There's been a lot of speculation about this kind of stuff. It takes on a life of its own, and unfortunately for people who are enthusiasts, it can be really deflating when stuff doesn't happen because it's just generally accepted that this is a thing, but it's never really...
No one has ever said it from Microsoft, right? They've never said on the record, hey, we're going to build Surface phones or, you know, even that we're going to continue building phones next year. They've never, like, laid out the commitment that cleanly. But I do think that Panos Panay's team is building phones. Yeah. And the question is, will they bring them to market? That's all I can say.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's pretty much all you can say on that topic, really, with any sense of authority. And that's the end of the story.
Yeah, and if they do come to market, it's going to be spring 2017 from all we hear.
Right.
Not before that.
You wonder, by the way, I thought about this when I saw this Intel thing, because you had come out with a story about early 17 with next generation Microsoft hardware, right? And a lot of that the talk at the time was obviously Surface, but possibly that phone, how that impacts other things. You know, does band get lumped into that? You know, whatever. Do you think they knew about this Intel stuff? Whether or not it was going to be canceled or it wasn't going to be ready or it wasn't going to work or do you think that was part of the schedule?
That's a really good question. And you know, what I was thinking about the other day was everybody was kind of thinking we'd see a Surface 4 running an Atom chip by now.
Right.
But that no one ever announced that never came to pass. And so that makes me think they knew that Intel was going to pull the plug on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe that did play into the idea of, okay, so we're not going to have that this year and we're going to just do the Big Bang thing next year.
Right.
I mean, they talk. Microsoft and Intel do talk.
Yes. It's never been like a super smooth, like,
love partnership. No, yeah. It is not.
I remember the late great Andy Grove being fair. This was in 99, 2000, be fairly upset at Microsoft. He said, we're making 32-bit chips and they keep making a 16-bit operating system. And, you know, they gotta get their act together. It was really not very complimentary. Mm-hmm. And I think that
there's been a lot of bad vibes with these companies.
Yeah.
Remember in fact, this the 16-bit / 32-bit stuff, when Windows 95 came to market, Intel briefly started selling multimedia software for Windows. And Microsoft was freaked by this, and they pulled it out of the. They had Intel pull it out of the market. I mean, within I think weeks, it was very quick. I mean, you know, you kind of don't remember it how it even happened, but it was just kind of like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
like what is this? You know, it's just it's a very strange relationship. I mean, these companies that someone from Microsoft told me this of Dell and Microsoft, but it kind of works for Intel and Microsoft too, which is. You know, these companies deserve each other. You know, they just, you know, they're partners, but they kind of, you know, they go at it.
Yeah.
It could go bad with ARM, too. I'm thinking about the Qualcomm 810 processor really kind of tanked a lot of phones because it wasn't a good process. It was like a really bad. Only in hindsight do I realize this because we now have the 820. I'm wondering, the 950 was based on the 810.
I think so. Yeah, right.
But I'm wondering if maybe they underclocked. Because what HTC had to do, LG, Samsung, they had to underclock it. It was overheating. They had all sorts of problems. The S6, which was a great phone in every respect, suffered because it was made on an 810 platform. And it just had all these hesitations. And that's all gone.
Battery life problems, too.
Battery life. Yeah. It's all gone with the 820. And so the big problem is that if you have one company making all the chips.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, at least everybody syncs with that company. But
Leo, monocultures always work.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand what you mean.
Yeah.
It's almost like the 810 was their Skylake.
But wait, isn't the way ARM works, a company licenses
right? The reason Qualcomm gets the bulk, in fact, maybe 99% of purchases in the U.S. is because they make one system on a chip with the radios and everything for the U.S. market. So even Samsung, which makes its own Exynos processors in the rest of the world, buys Qualcomm chips. Actually, Samsung didn't buy the Qualcomm 810. I think they decided, this is not a good chip. Everybody else did, though.
Because I remember Microsoft actually did license the ARM architecture back around 2010.
They could make their own ARM chips.
They could make their own.
That's what Apple does, by the way. It's a non-trivial thing. Apple has more than 1,000 chip engineers.
Right.
You know, working on this stuff. Yeah. They even bought a company, PA Risk, to do it.
Yep.
So, I mean, not that Microsoft doesn't have the wherewithal. They certainly could do that. But and here's another point. And this is from the chat room. We have to stop thinking of these as phones. That's really where you go wrong on this.
Which, by the way, is something a Microsoft fan would say, by the way.
Yeah. But it's true.
No, I know.
These are really pocket computers. And that, if you think of them that way, then you do think, man, maybe Microsoft really needs to be in this category.
Well, so it boils down to how important is it to the future of Microsoft for them to be a hardware company?
At all.
I mean, when you add up the phones and the Xboxes and the Surfaces, however you say that, is this a big enough market now? Is it going to be a bigger market in the future, a big enough market? I mean, is it just, are we really going to compete with the Qualcomms, Intels, you know, of the world?
Well, the reason they're in hardware is to showcase their software and services, as we know, right? And last quarter, they did sell a lot of Surfaces. They sold over $1 billion for the second consecutive quarter.
Right.
So, I mean, you could make a case for them staying in hardware, even if it's just to show off their own stuff. I think.
Let me apply logic to that, though, because I think you'll appreciate how true this is. If Microsoft were to come out with a family of Surface devices and/or phones in the future that had unique chips that they now owned in-house and developed, and gave them unique powers over stuff that was available to the OEMs. If there would be a backlash of historical proportions. And I really think the way Microsoft is right now, they're over conciliatory to their partners, and that they would never make such a move at this point, right? That it's, I think it's far more important for them to maintain their partner relationships than it is to sell another million services next year or whatever, however that makes it work. I don't know. Again, not based on anything other than thinking about it, but
the modern technology,
the way they're going,
world is a minefield.
Yep.
It really is a minefield. And especially tough for a company that's been dominant but now has to reinvent itself. And
Well, by the way, give them credit for reinventing themselves.
I mean, for all
the hand wringing, you know, look, I don't like IBM or care about IBM, but IBM seems to have set down on some semi-successful path. Good for them. They're not the company that I grew up on. You know, Microsoft, I don't think will be either 10 years down the road. Their ability to adapt and change and evolve is laudable. I mean, they may be moving into territory that I'm not super interested in per se, but that's just me. I mean, who cares? I mean, their ability to see what's happening and kind of adapt to it is smart. I mean, a lot of companies can't do it.
Is the jury still out about whether Microsoft could do it, or can we now say safely they've made the turn?
No, I think we can say they're heading in the right direction. It's hard to see. The future. What did you want to say about the future?
Best way to navigate a minefield is to buy Minecraft.
Done. Check. Check that one
off. I would just unleash the zombies on the minefield, but I see what you're saying.
Oh, it's tough because what you have to guess is what user patterns are going to be in 10 years. And the reason I think of this is Facebook has announced, you know, Mark Zuckerberg said, here's our 10-year plan. Apple's being encouraged to come up with a 10-year plan. And in technology, that's a lifetime.
That's like asking the founders of the United States to say, how do you see the country going after the Civil War has already occurred?
No, that's true.
You know, like that's
true. Well, you know, Microsoft has always done these. Remember these Envision videos they do where it's just kind of like, here's our fantasy world in 10 years. And some of those things come to pass. But I think you have to have that to just get your teams thinking about, okay, where should we be thinking about going and not be limited by what we can do today, you know? Well, so they all do it to some extent. It's just pretty impossible to really realistically plan that far out.
Yeah. Are they a hardware company or are they just a software company? Are they a services company?
Yeah. I think that they're a services company. They become a cloud service.
Software and services. Yep.
Although, remember, you got to really make your software sing. Or actually, they said you really want to make your hardware sing. You have to make the software too. You have to do both.
But you know what? I realize they just had a kind of a bonanza quarter for services, but in the sort of online services / cloud services world, Apple's not exactly a player.
No.
I mean, I think their strength is literally in that hardware software combination. Mm-hmm. Microsoft's strength historically is, you know, the software, right? Platforms. As the platform moves to the cloud, this benefits them. This is their core strength. You know, Mary Jo was saying earlier something along the notion of, Office 365 subscription being extended to support these continuum scenarios, and their data centers are what's providing these desktop apps to phones or whatever. That they're really good at that stuff.
They are.
That makes sense. Like that's a great future for Microsoft.
Yeah.
And by the way, they also have a good setup for building enterprises. You know, they're really good at that.
They do. Yep. Yeah.
And they get, you know what, they get a lot of scrutiny, more so probably than a lot of companies. I mean,
I haven't noticed that. What do you mean?
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, we talk all the time about Microsoft and their failure in phone. I just saw an article that said, Google, are they disappointed with the 5X? Hell, the 5X and the 6P sold probably a fraction of what Windows Phone sold. I don't know. But
probably in the same.
Maybe in the same. Right, but nobody's saying, boy.
You know what? Look, that's a huge separate conversation. But I would just point to something like, I look at this stuff. Microsoft's phone strategy about a year and a half ago, part of it was all the low-end phones. Remember, they came up with all these phones that were low-end. And different low-end phones for different markets and all that. Google went after that exact same market with something called Android One, and there have been two generations of these devices, and they have failed miserably.
Yeah.
So this is a market that Apple doesn't compete in. There was a story this week about Apple trying to go to India with used phones because it was the only way they could compete in the low-end phone market in that country, and they were denied that capability. this is something that no one has figured out, apparently. So there is, you know, Nokia used to talk about this. Microsoft still talks about this. The Google does. Apple, I'm not really sure. But this notion of the next billion users, right? The people coming up in the world in emerging markets, you know, how do we serve those people? How do we get them on devices and keep them in ecosystems is something that literally none of these companies have figured out. That's a big deal.
It's true. And when Microsoft did talk about low-end phones last year, they talked about them as a vehicle for selling their services. So they said, you know, if we do these kind of phones for developing and emerging markets, we want them to be like the Outlook phone and the Skype phone, right? Like they, this is how they think about it. They're like, you know, we know we're going to take a loss on the hardware, but where we think we can hook people in is through the software and the services. And so that's how they think about that. Although I have to say, since last summer, we haven't really heard them doing something in that space, right? I mean, have they come out with a bunch of phones like that? No.
Nope. No. They have not.
Would you say that the Microsoft strategy has been consistent since Satya Nadella came on? I mean,
There hasn't been fits and starts in the sense that he has changed things midstream from what he started with. Obviously, he's changed a lot of stuff from what was there before. And I think that's the
He's tweaking it as he goes along. Sure. I think he can't. It'll be really interesting this summer when he does his state of the state thing like he's been doing every year to see kind of where it veers off from what he said last year.
And I don't know, you know, maybe because of what happened last summer, I will now always look to the summer with some kind of grim fascination. You know, will he take the axe to certain things in July? At the end of, you know, when you kind of look back as one does after a year, you know, we do it calendar year, they do it fiscal year. So it's end of June, beginning of July. Is he going to, you know, take that same kind of cold look at businesses and say, sorry, you're not pulling your weight. This is over. Will that happen again? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And some of them will be small. It won't be a big deal.
Yeah.
But some of them could be big. I mean, I'm nervous is maybe the wrong word, but I'm a little, you know, after what happened last year, you got to be a little bit nervous.
All right. Let's move to Windows 10. No new updates this week, right?
Yep.
Unless I missed something.
Right. Yep. No new builds for the fastering on mobile or PC.
Some kind of a bug preventing that. So next week.
Okay. So there was a plan. Are they trying to go to weekly builds now?
It's actually, it's
been faster.
Faster than weekly. Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Sorry. I'm getting the Windows 10 upgrade alert.
Oh no. You know, are you really?
So let me,
we can't really tell cause your image.
Oh, did you end my video?
No, we didn't end it, but.
Oh.
You're a little pixelish.
You're a little pixelated.
So this is a picture.
Is that your computer?
No, it's a piece of paper. Raphael printed it out.
Oh.
Sorry, I'm pixelated.
You're so pixelated, we thought it was a computer. How funny. Do you want to call him back?
I stopped his return.
We stopped his return.
Do you want to call me back?
You looked great for a long time. As soon as you took off the HoloLens, it all went to hell.
Yeah, see what happens?
See?
When you don't use Microsoft technology.
See what I'm saying? Are you using your computer? Oh, you said the Lenovo, right?
Yeah, it's a Lenovo. It's wired. I mean, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you know, tell Raphael he should buy a decent internet connection.
Man, I think he's still on DSL.
He's buying all those HoloLenses. Come on.
He's probably downloading illegal software in the background.
That's what's going on. Yeah,
he's hacking the NSA or something.
Yeah, Raphael, knock it off. let's see. Cortana, changes in Cortana?
Yeah.
What's
was kind of interesting last week. So, you know, the search box in Windows 10 that is the Cortana search box. Microsoft did have a loophole in there where people could make it so if you used that search box, you were not using their search engine. You weren't using Bing. So they decided, well, I don't know when they decided this, but they announced last week they're tightening that up. So if you use the Cortana search box on Windows 10, you're going to be searching with Bing and Edge, and that's it. And they're going to close the loophole so that you cannot use any other search engine or browser if you're searching in that box.
Hmm.
However, you can still search using your search engine of choice if you go through a browser. And so you can still use Chrome on Windows 10. You can use any other search engine that you want. It's just they're talking about the search box experience and the Cortana experience that's in Windows 10. So the reason they said they did this was they have this kind of, I don't know what they call it. Like they are using Cortana and Bing in a way combined to give people this richer search experience. And they said if you switch out the search engine, you don't get all the same kinds of results presented in the same way that you will if you use Bing and Edge. Also, I'm sure they don't want other search engine vendors to be able to cut into their search and advertising revenues because they're making a lot of money after from search and advertising sales from Windows 10 by having that search box and the Cortana experience built in. So I've seen a little pushback about this. I haven't seen a ton of pushback about it. I think it was Opera who said, hey, maybe it was Firefox who said, we don't like that Microsoft's doing this. I think the fact that sure. you can just use a browser and still search the way you want kind of takes away some of the legs of grievance against this. But yeah.
Firefox, by the way, was the first major company, at least, to create a workaround for this little thing. So you can kind of see where they would have a problem with it.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this? I mean, I think they briefed us on this, you know, and so the conversation I had, I got the feeling that they were waiting for some blowback, right? Like, you know, they were trying to push the consumer benefit of it and everything. And they were like, look, this isn't us being belligerent, you know.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I don't have a problem with this, I guess. The Edge part, I don't quite understand. I think requiring Cortana, you know, Cortana is a feature of Windows 10. So like requiring it or, you know, designing it to use their own search technologies in the back end, to me, whatever, that's fine.
Yeah.
The fact that that it triggers a browser window and it defeats your default browser and goes to Edge, actually, that's a little weird. And I don't quite understand. I'm sure they could justify it, you know, based on, you know, some way that Edge was designed to, you know, for Cortana. But that seems a little odd to me.
Yeah. They're trying to boost Edge's share because I forget what the last numbers were that I saw, but a lot of Windows 10 users are not using Edge. And I don't think it's just because extensions aren't there. I think there are other reasons that people are still kind of iffy about Edge. It doesn't have all the features that IE has, for example, or Chrome, obviously. So this is another way you can kind of push people that way and say, hey, we're building that in, and there you have it.
Yep.
Okay.
Right. It doesn't bother me too much because I never tried to change that setting out. I left the Cortana search box. I use it, and I know I'm getting Bing results on Edge when I use it. But the way I still do almost all my searches is in my browser.
Right. I don't like it that it launches Edge, though. It should launch the default browser.
It's a little it is a little annoying.
Well, it just violates the tradition, which is you should be able to choose a default browser, and it should everything in the system should honor that.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is more treating the operating system as like a mobile device. I mean, that's what Apple does too, right? But
of course, yep.
Siri uses Bing. And Safari, and you can't change Safari.
That's right.
That's the mobile browser of choice.
Yeah, you could use Chrome all you want on iOS, but you're going to be using Safari. Safari's going to happen. There's no way around
it. Desktops has been you could reassign that. I hate this. I mean, I guess it's just kind of the nature of computing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's moving that way.
And for a lot of people have been saying to me, okay, so I guess this means antitrust investigation in 3, 2, 1.
Nope.
I'm like, no. For a lot of reasons. For one, Bing doesn't have dominant market share. Google and Microsoft just agreed to stop taking their brawls out to public antitrust courts. Also, Microsoft doesn't have dominant share in operating systems if you count all operating systems together. Including
if you count the operating systems people are actually using, it's not how I would worth that. You know, back in 1997, Windows was 95%-ish of the market for all personal computing devices on Earth. You know, today it's 90-ish% of PCs, but it was 30-ish% of all computing devices less. I mean, it's not even close to being monopoly.
Yep. Yep. You can also, I believe you can hide or turn off the search box. I mean, it doesn't have to show up in your taskbar, and you don't have to use it that way either, right?
You can just turn it off, yeah.
Right. So that's another way you can just not have this happen if you don't want it to happen.
Right. If you don't want to use Cortana, you don't have to use Cortana, and then Edge will never appear. You don't have to worry about it. Yeah.
Right. I think people forget a lot of times that Cortana is Bing. Like, that's what it is underneath, right? I mean, it seems like they're two different things, but really, Cortana is built on top of Bing. It's like the lipstick on Bing, right? Not lipstick on a pig. Not lipstick on a pig.
Lipstick on
Bing.
The Bing. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's another reason this is all tied together, too. Like, people are saying, I don't think Cortana is really tied to Bing. Well, it's built on Bing. So, I mean, there are some reasons
this actually makes sense.
Right.
That I understand. But I don't like it that it launches Edge as a default
browser. Yeah, right. That's the one problem I have with this.
If Edge were more capable, it might not have that problem. But Edge is not. So,
but you're right, Leo. This is exactly how mobile systems work. Mm-hmm. If you do a search on iOS, even if you use Chrome, you know, Safari is what comes up.
Yeah.
You
know? It isn't that way on Android. You can choose a default browser on Android, but it is on iOS.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I look more and more toward Linux, where an operating system where the commercial interests of the company creating it do not trump your own personal use decisions.
Mm-hmm. We're not using the word Trump around here, Leo.
I noticed. Not one word.
It does not Fiorina your decision.
What did Father Robert had a great tweet. Carly Fiorina is the first person ever to drop out of a presidential race twice in one primary.
Sure.
But there was a new, and they said the Compaq HP merger was bad. That was it. Nice tweet, Robert. Mac on the cusp of 10% usage share. Microsoft Windows, oh no, falling below 90%.
Wow. Well, that is a first.
It's huge. Yeah.
89 point something percent. This is from Net Applications, which years ago there was some debate over, you know, which firm had the better analytics. It was kind of StatCounter versus Net Applications, net market share. And Microsoft told me at the time that they went with net market share, that their methodology was the more realistic, true to form, whatever. And I think StatCounter had a couple of things, you know, earlier than Net Applications. So, for example, Chrome, you know, surpassing IE usage just happened, according to Net Applications. StatCounter had that years ago. But interestingly, this month, this quarter, we see the Mac is 9.57%, I think was the figure, very close to 10%. And Windows, for the first time, fell below 90%. That's a milestone. You know, it's interesting. It's not in any danger of losing its, you know, dominance, but that's what we might have said about Internet Explorer back in 1990-something or whatever year that was. You know, The trend is there. I mean, the Mac has never really advanced quickly from a usage share perspective, despite the fact that for years and years, Apple touted every quarter how they outperformed the PC market. But it's risen steadily. I mean, it had hovered around the 7-ish percent range for a while. And this quarter was actually a pretty big jump, which is unusual because, of course, Mac sales fell year over year as well. But just not as bad as PCs. So we'll see. You know, we'll see whether this trend continues. This should be obvious because I'm a Windows guy, but I have a Mac and I use it from time to time. I just blew it away and I did a cloud install of the OS, which, by the way, is very cool. You can do it from bare metal. It's really neat. And then from that point on, I really pretty much hate the rest of it. Like, I really just not a big fan of the Mac. But that thing was cool. The cloud restore thing was really neat.
What do they do with the numbers in terms of Macs running Windows? Do they take that into account at all?
So this is the OS. So if a Mac was running Windows, it would be seen as a Windows machine.
It would.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Huh.
But I don't.
Nobody
honestly,
runs
I mean,
only Windows. Well, few. I would
yeah, imagine. And I don't see. I don't honestly think that's a huge use case. You know, back in the day, I mean, when Mac OS X first came out, remember the concern then was backwards compatibility, and they did their stuff for the classic OS. And I think adding boot camp was, you know, when they went to Intel, was a way to kind of smooth things out there. But, you know, maybe possibly, I don't think it really worked out this way, but possibly a better solution than virtualization. I don't think this is a huge use case, frankly, but it's there if you want it.
But a lot of Mac people have Windows lying around in a VM in case they need to.
And that thing we were talking about earlier, I mean, if Microsoft should decide to host applications in a data center, that would be a way to get things down to a Mac.
Right.
I know they have Office, but they don't have all of the Office apps. It'd be really interesting if you could get some more, you know, get Windows apps running on a Mac as well. Why not? I mean, it's a possibility.
Absolutely. Okay. Checking that one off the list. Chrome is used more than IE.
Yeah, so that's
a shift, but that happened a while ago, didn't it? Or
kind of happened gradually, right?
IE lost dominance.
I'm amazed that IE has stuck around as much as it did. I think at this point, even Microsoft has given up on it. Basically, I think savvy technical Windows users are using Chrome or Firefox. Edge, we'll see. Maybe in the future, it will evolve to the point where it can be. I want to use Edge just for the fidelity of the screen, you know, the presentation.
So and beautiful. The scroll and everything.
It's really
just
neat.
Just make it a full-fledged browser. That's all.
Yeah. It takes a while when you start from scratch, right?
Yes.
I mean, I'll draw another Apple parallel. You remember when Mac OS X first shipped in 2001-ish? It didn't have a DVD player.
Right.
You know, that was something they added later. I mean, it's that's what happens. You're starting new. Things are going to come in over time.
I guess.
I know.
Netscape was written in 6 months.
Well, that was a different era.
It was easier to write then.
Yeah. Plus, there were no really good, I mean, there was Mosaic, but there were no mainstream solutions that were full-featured and that they had to compete
with.
No,
you know, competition.
Yeah, Edge Mosaic. Comes into the world. We have expectations of browsers. Right. Even full-featured browsers like Opera, which are technically excellent and have amazing functionality, don't do very well usage-wise. I mean, it's hard to get people to move to something new, which actually maybe explains IE. I don't know, but... it's going to take a
while. Aesthetically, I like Edge. It's not that at all. In fact, it's really simply plugins.
Yeah.
You just have to run LastPass.
Really
that's all.
I know.
It's not going to happen until
it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah.
Yep.
And related in this rundown, can Apple and Google kill the PC market? I think Paul must have written that.
Yes.
What do you mean by that, Paul? Whatever do
am
you
I some,
mean?
Am I some kind of a crow, Leo? What does that mean? Well, you know, it's been amusing to me to watch companies copy Surface again and again, right? And the PC industry, I mean, it's like they've just lined up like dominoes. Every single major PC maker has come out with their version of a Surface device. I mean, they're everywhere now. And that's kind of neat for Microsoft in the sense that they've formalized this market for two-in-ones, and it's a thing, you know. But, of course, Google and Apple are doing it too. And this kind of gets us back to that age-old debate about, you know, you've got this full-featured desktop OS over here that's super powerful, does everything, but it's really complicated and big and heavy. And then you've got this little mobile OS over here that's tiny and small and lightweight, but it's, you know, functionally limited in a way, and they kind of move toward each other.
And there's Chrome OS. HP just announced a really nice HP, Dell, and Acer all have kind of now mid-range, powerful enough for work Chromebooks.
Yeah, actually, I think the big distinction there is the work part. Chrome OS has only done well in the education market and only in the U.S., but major PC makers are now making work-focused or business-focused Chromebooks.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. If, you know, Microsoft and Windows has been attacked on the low end and the high end, right? The low end with Chrome OS and the high end with Macs. But there's also this big thing happening outside of that world, which is the mobile devices. And you're starting to see Android especially, but iOS as well, on the iPad Pro, them adding more and more productivity features to these operating systems, multitasking capabilities, running apps side by side in iOS, running apps in Windows in the next version of Android. These are very basic capabilities from the perspective of a powerful desktop app operating system. But for mobile operating systems, these are big steps up into the big leagues. This is like wearing, you know, big daddy clothes and, you know, sitting at the big table now.
Well, and Google might give them a big hand up by making Android apps run on these things.
Run on
That's
Chrome.
The strong
yeah, exactly.
rumor. That's something we're, I think, going to see at Google I.O.
Yeah. So, you know, Google, actually Google and Apple have been pushing on businesses for a long time. That's kind of the holy grail for them because they're already very big with consumers, but they really want to be big in business. And business is Microsoft's thing. I have thought for a long time, and I kind of see it happening now, that it's actually easier to start from scratch with something simple and small and light and add the handful of features that most people need. And that's the thing we were talking about earlier with Office. I mean, how many features of Excel do you need? Well, about 21 of them, as it turns out, not 2,111. And those are available in the mobile app version of Excel. And it's ironic, perhaps, that Microsoft has given them a little bit of a hand here by making Office run so well on these mobile devices, by creating non-Office apps that only run on those mobile devices.
Yeah, I mean, Office for web on Chromebooks, right? And it's pretty complete, right?
You can run Skype for web. Now on Chromebooks, you can't do video and audio chat, I don't think, but you can do. I was doing it the other day on a Chromebook. It works fine. And so I would say that they are very close to being able to replace Windows for most people, whereas I think we would all agree that Windows is not close at all to being able to replace iOS or Android for most people. There's a big gap there. That's the reason I wrote this, that it's really not hard to imagine iOS or Android this year improving enough to make that final push. Whereas it's impossible to imagine Windows 10 going in the opposite direction and it making sense on mobile devices for most people. It's just, it's impossible. And it's not because there's something wrong with it. Windows 10 is fantastic. It's just that it's Windows. You know, it's really in its element in non-mobile devices. It's just, and I don't mean laptops. I'm talking about, you know, phones and small tablets. And a lot of its ecosystem stuff.
I think Microsoft's kind of come around to realizing that too, because I feel like that's why we're seeing them push things like their apps and services on iOS and Android.
Right.
Instead of saying, oh, I need them to be running on Windows 10. In fact, many times, as we've talked about before on the show, they don't even have versions of some apps available on Windows 10 mobile, or it's just kind of an afterthought or a later thought. It's amazing to think the Windows company thinks this way now, but they're not the Windows company.
Remember the outrage at Build when they didn't even bother to mention Windows Phone or show Windows Phone on stage when they could have swapped out one or two of the iOS screens for some Windows Phone screen. It would have been easy. They didn't do it. I sort of look back on that now and think, not that it was purposeful, but rather that they don't understand why people don't get this already, right? Here's an example from today. I'm not there, but Brad was tweeting from the SharePoint show out in San Francisco. Microsoft's up on stage. There's Macs, there's iOS devices, there's Android phones, there's no Windows phones. And this is them saying, wake up. This is the world. Yeah. Like, we are working with everybody, you know? It's really not, it's not that Microsoft has failed per se. It's almost like this community of people that follows Microsoft, us, you know, are not just like seeing the shift. You know, it's like they're okay with it. You know, the future of this company is based on these cloud services and serving people where they are. That's not a defeat. It's an acknowledgement, and it's not a horrible future. Mm-hmm. And I don't like it personally, which is why
it's not a horrible future unless your podcast is called Windows Week.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Okay. Fair enough. Yes, it's right. That's what I mean. So from the we're basically enthusiasts in a way. I mean, it's hard from that perspective because the stuff that I care about certainly is the PCs and the, you know, I love Windows Phone. I mean, I love it. And but you know, you can't live in this bubble and pretend. You know, it's not like, you know, no, everything's fine. You know,
I know. Right.
Everything is fine. It's just that everything's changing.
Yeah. The world is changing.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
And I will add, because you brought up the Mac earlier, you know, Microsoft, I think, at least started changing earlier. This change they're on began a few years ago, right? And that's why Microsoft has a growing services business and why their stock price has been going up. There's definitely a trajectory that they're on to turn into more of a services company. So I think, you know, companies like Apple are going to have to show that they also have a play there and that, you know, and a very viable strategy. Right now, analysts aren't buying that.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I mean, I'm pretty sure the only reason, yeah, iCloud exists so you can back up your iPhone. I don't know that anyone uses it for anything else. Like, it's just not a big player. I mean, obviously they've got a music service that's kind of interesting. I guess that's technically a cloud service. Yeah. Although you can't access it from the web, by the way, which is a little strange. This is a place where Microsoft's done a really good job.
Yeah. They didn't do it willingly, but they have done it.
No, but, you know, there was an interview with Satya Nadella the other day where he addressed this very topic. You know, you can't cling to the past. You can't, you know, this is a problem Apple's going to face with the iPhone, because the iPhone we now know is basically their Windows. How do you follow up the most successful product of all time?
Yeah, yeah.
It's really hard. Yeah. How does Michael Jackson follow a Thriller?
Yeah,
you know?
No.
It's no. I mean,
no,
it's
tough. The sophomore jinx, all that. Yeah,
yeah.
It's really interesting. Yeah,
yeah.
All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk about cloud stuff. It's getting cloudy out there, and then of course tips and picks and all of that. Mary Jo Foley is here from allaboutmicrosoft.com. She's at her home base in the Isle of Manhattan. Paul Thurrott is on the Isle of Bellevue, up there in the Pacific Northwest, the great Pacific Northwest, where the fog has actually rolled into Raphael's house.
Yep.
Beautiful view. We will have more in just a minute. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you are in the unenviable, I don't know, maybe I'll say enviable position of hiring at your company. Unenviable because, yeah, it's hard. Enviable because you, more than anybody, more than, you know, the CEO, more than the board of directors, you are going to determine the future of your company, because hiring the right person makes your company work great. Hiring the wrong person can bring it right down to its knees. ZipRecruiter is going to help. Let's assume, I think this is a safe assumption, I hope it's a safe assumption, that there's one or maybe more than one person out there, the perfect employee for you. All the skills you want, the enthusiasm, the commitment, the hard worker, the right person is sitting out there. How do you get them? Let me ask you that question. How do you find that person? Are you going to wait till they find you? You may be waiting a long time. What you want to do really is go where they are. But that means posting on many, many job boards. It means reaching out across the country. That's what ZipRecruiter does for you. With one post at ZipRecruiter.com, you'll reach more than 100 job boards, plus all the social networks that you want to be on, including Twitter and Craigslist and Facebook, everywhere. You get yourself out there and give yourself the best chance possible of reaching that person who's waiting to hear from you. They don't even know you exist, but they know that's the job they want. Now, you might say, well, Leo, that's fine, except I don't want to get 100 million calls to my phone or emails. Well, you won't, because ZipRecruiter does a really cool thing. Instead of forwarding it to your email or your phone number, they put it into the ZipRecruiter interface, where you can go and rank them very quickly, screen out the ones you don't want, pick the right person fast, often in a matter of days, because they also have millions of current resumes. People go to ZipRecruiter looking for work as well, and they can start matching those right away. So within 24 hours, the applicants are going to come rolling in. Search by skills, by location, by work experience. Your job listing will look great on any size screen. That means mobile applicants, people who are on the go, can use ZipRecruiter. In fact, their unique mobile apply process will bring in far more applicants than ever before. Find candidates in any city, any industry, nationwide. More than 800,000 companies use ZipRecruiter now. That number's doubled in the last few months. It's a great solution. Hundreds of the Fortune 500 included. Why don't you try it free for 4 days right now? Go to ZipRecruiter.com/windows. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. 4 days free await, and you are going to see great results. We go back again and again. You will too. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. We thank them so much for supporting Paul and Mary Jo and Windows Weekly. All right, Mary Jo, we've been talking enough about this silly client-side stuff. Let's go to SharePoint in the cloud.
Oh, wait. Can we talk about Outlook.com for a moment?
What's the latest? Yeah. Is it there? Did you get it?
I got it.
Mary Jo got it.
I don't think Paul has it, though.
Do you have it, Paul? Oh, he's... hello, Paul? You silenced?
You can't
muted?
Talk.
Unmute thine self.
Sorry about that. No, I do not have it. I literally just checked today.
Play the drum roll, because I'm going to do my weekly visit to Outlook.com. I don't use it for my main email.
When you do it, does a boxing glove come out of the screen and punch you in the face?
Yeah, my security information's fine. What? Wah, wah, wah. The old Outlook for me.
Yeah. Okay, right? So I'm gonna tell you guys what's going on.
What's going on?
Because after we had been talking about this the past few shows, I went to the team and I said, can you guys explain why it feels like nobody has this? So here, I'm going to tell you what they said. And I'm not going to try to say whether I think these numbers are true, because I have no idea.
Because they're ludicrous.
They seem a little unbelievable. But Microsoft's got 400 million Outlook.com users, and they claim almost 200 million, actually, to be precise, 175 million have the new Outlook.com, which is half, right? So I said to them, wow, well, I guess I think I know like three people who have it.
This is insane.
Not that I know every Outlook.com user in the world, but they said, if you remember what happened, they announced last May that they were starting, excuse me, the preview for the new Outlook.com. They said it would start rolling out slow, then go to more users over time. Hold on. I've got choked up.
This topic chokes me up, too.
They started doing some tests. I think they didn't say this, but I think the test didn't go well, the initial tests. They said they were getting a lot of feedback from users about the transition process, yada, yada, yada. So then I think they started rolling it out a little more broadly towards the end of last year. Then in February, suddenly they took the preview tag off and said, okay, it's out of preview. And millions of people are getting it every week. What they didn't tell us at that point was there's a kind of a set of waves in terms of who gets it when. So people who use it in the most simple way are getting it first. Well, let me start again. So people who are getting brand new Outlook.com accounts are getting it first. The next group are people like me who don't have a lot of special setup in their Outlook.com. Like, I'm not sharing calendars with anyone or doing any kind of advanced things in my inbox. I have the most simple setup in my Outlook.com. So I think that's why I got it next. It seems like people who are more power users are getting it later in the process.
Interesting.
And so they said, you know, they're moving. They said, you know, you guys are comparing this to when we moved from Hotmail to Outlook.com. Yeah, from Hotmail to Outlook.com. But it isn't like that. It's not just a facelift. We're actually changing the plumbing of the service, too. So we're moving the accounts onto some of the building blocks that we use for Office 365. So they actually use the words, we're moving data and accounts. I don't know which data they are moving as part of that or what that exactly means, but they did say that's another part of the reason that this is taking a longer time than many people expected. They also did say they expect most everybody to be migrated by the end of this summer, so August timeframe.
Will it help if I delete all my messages?
I don't think it'll help.
No, I've already I tried that one.
Yeah.
Because I don't use the way, it. I have an account because I had to set up a Microsoft account, but right. I never use it.
Yeah.
Right.
The way you know you have it is it looks kind of like OWA, Outlook Web Access, yeah. Right?
Right?
It has that simple UI. You also can add themes, and you get options like to have add-ins like Uber and Evernote right inside the inbox. So you'll know it when you have it that way, but it doesn't like have this revolutionary kind of like, wow. I think a lot of the features are hidden under the covers. So when you get it, you may not actually realize you have it. I know. So maybe some people have it and they don't know they have it.
That would be amazing to me.
You know what? When I got switched over, I wasn't sure that was... I'm like, that's it? That's,
really?
That's the new thing?
I mean, do you use it on the web every day?
Well, give us a way to tell.
Oh, okay.
How do you tell?
So in my account, the way I could tell was it came across in colors, and then in the corner it had like the, I don't know what you call that, the Office 365 pane of applications that I have access to. So it looks like Office 365, right? I can see that, you know, I have OneDrive and OneNote and Sway and Docs.com, all those things. I see them there. It has a banner where I can change the themes. I think it turned clutter on, which I always turn off for decluttering your inbox. I don't really like that. They have this whole focused inbox thing. I also shut that off. I don't want that either. Along the top, it just has a much cleaner look and feel, and you can see the apps under the menu where you can add in different apps. I don't know. It's not some like crazy revolutionary thing. I guess I always say this, and it's true. I'm not a very UI-focused person. I look at words, and I don't look at design.
Right.
So for me, I'm just like, I don't know. It looks a little different. Maybe I've got it. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wish there were some easy way to
know. But yeah, I have it now. And I think you'll have it too soon. I've actually been hearing from more people this week that they got it. And I hadn't been hearing that, but more and more people are saying, hey, I just got it.
Interesting.
Well, I have emptied every folder. I got nothing there. This would be the easiest thing to move.
Please, Microsoft, we're begging you.
Yeah.
It's coming. It's coming. At least now we kind of know what happened. It just felt like...
Well, it's a big change. That's...
And where was it? Everybody's like, oh, why don't I have it? I don't know.
Yeah. Wow.
All right.
Eric Chu just said 3 out of my 4 accounts have been moved to the new Outlook.
Okay. Wow. So in other words, this is all imminent. Yeah, check, Paul. Maybe you have it.
Yeah.
No,
you,
I mean,
if
check
you have
almost
multiple
every day.
Accounts, do you have multiple accounts?
Right. I do, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You should check the other ones. Maybe one of yours have been moved over.
I just have my main Microsoft account, and I wouldn't have Outlook if it weren't for that.
Yeah. Well, then you're not
missing
it. Let me
just head on over to Hotmail.com.
Actually, that's the truth. I did have a Hotmail account, which I migrated to Outlook. So I had that account before I had to log into a Microsoft account. So here's somebody sent me a link. He just signed up for Outlook.
And he got it, right?
Right
off the bat.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, he says he does. You tell me. Does this look like it? Get to know. Look. I mean, I don't know.
I know. See, it seems like it should be really obvious, right?
It doesn't look different, so I don't know. Maybe I do have it, and I just didn't know it.
I can't see it, so I can't tell you.
Is
but
it possible? It's still blue at the top, right?
Mine was orange when it... crossed over.
Yeah, it could be different.
Yeah.
So, no, I still have it on.
Yeah.
Well, what he's sending me looks exactly like what I've got. So, that's my puzzlement.
Yeah.
The source of my puzzlement is maybe you don't have the new one.
I think I do because I have all those capabilities that are for the new Outlook. Yeah.
I think you do, too.
Yeah, so this is James, and this is... Well, I mean, I have the sidebar turned on. Maybe I do have the new one. I don't know. This is what I have. It's the same. How do you freaking know, man? This should
go
be
to
a version thing.
Yeah, I wonder. Is there an about?
My
there
hamburger
isn't.
Is there? But you said that. That's the same, right?
Like, go to your settings wheel up there and see if you have like. I think manage add-ins is new, right?
I don't have I have manage rules and categories.
No, so you don't have the new one.
I should have something that says like version number.
Mine, it says manage add-ins under there.
Okay. Yeah.
Change theme.
Yeah, but now I am on a Mac. I don't know if that shouldn't make any difference. Browsers are browsers.
No, it shouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, there's your update on what's going on with Outlook.com.
Okay, so you don't freak. You're getting it any
Don't
day
freak
now.
Out.
Any
oh, I'm freaking
now.
Out. I'm freaking out.
I know. Well, you put the HoloLens on earlier today. I think that's part of the freaking out.
Yeah. Freak out.
All right, I'm going to retreat into a virtual world where I have the new Outlook.com.
Can I do that, too? I want to do that, too. Okay, now we'll talk about SharePoint. Is this is this all you, Mary Jo?
Finally. Yeah. This is the only reason I even came on the show today.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to go play a game on Oculus Rift.
All right. See you later, Mary Jo. It's all yours.
Guys, hold on. I'm going to make this exciting.
Okay.
This is my challenge.
Yes.
All right. So today... May 4th, Microsoft announced a whole roadmap of what they're doing with SharePoint. So SharePoint is this kind of Swiss Army knife of collaboration and storage and social media stuff in one product that's called SharePoint. There's a SharePoint online. There's a SharePoint on premises. So this week, Microsoft made generally available SharePoint Server 2016, which is the on-prem version of SharePoint. Okay, has a bunch of new features. It's pretty cool. There you go. That's enough about that. The stuff that was more interesting is what they're doing going forward. And if you remember, for a while, Microsoft had merged together the OneDrive and the SharePoint teams, and it kind of felt like the consumer team was winning out a little. And they kind of took their eye off the ball on SharePoint, because SharePoint is really an enterprise product, Microsoft's bread and butter. It's like a $3 billion business in and of itself, just that one product at Microsoft. So it's a big deal. And they've kind of come back full circle, and they've figured out what people want and what they need. So one of the big things they're going to be delivering in the next 6 months, starting now, is SharePoint apps for mobile phones. That didn't even exist before. So SharePoint for iOS is going to be first, then Android, then Windows 10. And you're going to have SharePoint in the palm of your hand, as they like to say. So it's like having access to all your files, your corporate files, your folders, your shared sites, your contacts are all going to be available through these mobile apps. They also announced OneDrive, Universal Windows Platform app is coming. They have a whole roadmap about where they're integrating SharePoint with OneDrive and how they're going to make SharePoint an even better platform for developers. So, I mean, they wrote like 10 blog posts on this today. So I can't obviously tell you everything they announced, but it's a pretty comprehensive roadmap. And people who have been watching the event today and who are there in San Francisco, like Brad is, they're actually pretty excited about it. I've seen a lot of people who kind of wrote SharePoint off and said, Microsoft is just kind of letting this wither. They've been coming back and saying, wow, I'm actually kind of excited about what they're doing here. They're bringing it back into the fold. They're making it something more interesting, more modern, to use one of the words they like to use with SharePoint now. So go check out all these blog posts, or you can just check out my site. I've got the whole roadmap on there. And yeah, SharePoint's back, baby. That's what I'll say.
Okay.
Did it ever really leave?
Yeah. It kind of was like people were really dissing SharePoint and saying, you know, maybe it's just too big and too old.
There's nothing else out there that does the same thing, is there? I mean,
not all the stuff that it does. No. Right. I mean, you have different piece products that do. It's like I saw some people saying, oh, they're doing this to compete with Slack. SharePoint barely competes with Slack. It does so much more than what Slack does. I would actually say Skype competes with Slack, not SharePoint.
I don't think of them in the same sentence.
Me neither. No. I mean, Office groups and what Microsoft is doing to add groups functionality to Office, that compares more to Slack and Slack channels than I would say what they're doing with SharePoint. But speaking of groups, they're integrating groups into SharePoint too. It's almost like Microsoft kind of slept on SharePoint for a while, and now they're saying, oh, wow, we have this great asset, and we should bring it into the modern world. Jeff Teper, he's back running the team. There you go.
Well,
so how's that?
Very,
there you go.
That's good. No, I'm happy.
Okay.
I'm happy, although
SharePoint in a nutshell.
SharePoint's like Exchange. It's
boring? Oh, sorry.
No, big, complex.
Oh, big, yes.
Challenging.
Yes. Yep.
Yes. A complex. Yeah.
It's not an easy product. I mean, people have a love-hate relationship with it, often hate because it's something you have to customize.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah, but it's
I think really better for a bigger enterprise with people who can dedicate people to it.
Exactly.
Yeah, we wouldn't use it here. I mean, we considered it. There was some some pressure to, from our internally, because a lot of people like it and wanted to use it. Mm-hmm. I think it was overkill for us.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably so.
It's a big business, though.
It is.
Yeah.
Very big business. Yeah.
It's almost the one you want to bring in a SharePoint expert and have them customize it so that it's kind of turnkey for you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are companies who have built entire huge businesses on just selling SharePoint and customizing SharePoint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is very big business.
Let's make Paul happy about OneDrive.
Oh, man. So, okay. The OneDrive news is not great because...
that's not going to make me happy.
I know. I'm going to try to bring you down gently. So they're doing a lot of things right around integrating SharePoint with OneDrive. They're kind of phasing this in gradually, and they're going to have the full integration of SharePoint and OneDrive for Business by the end of this year, pretty much. But in this UWP app, you'd think they might start talking about what is going to replace placeholders, maybe? No, they didn't talk about that today at all, and they're still not talking about that at all. So I can't make Paul very happy because we don't know what's going on with the placeholder replacement in OneDrive right now. They still say something is coming, but we don't know what that thing is or when it's coming. We don't know.
And that's the thing Paul misses so much.
Although you've kind of gotten past it, haven't you? Like, I haven't heard you complaining that much about placeholder.
Yeah, I mean, I've adapted.
You've moved on.
I moved on by spending $99 on Dropbox, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
I know. I said to them, now that Dropbox is announcing placeholders, I guess you guys are going to say something this week about placeholders? No.
I don't. It sounds familiar. I don't remember what those were anymore. It's just gone for me. Placeholders.
I've been playing with a really geeky solution called Infinite that does placeholders for S3 and Google. But it's a little, once you set it up, it's really kind of cool. But but ODrive does all of this too.
Years ago, I thought S3, someone was going to write some front end to S3 that would just
answer
everyone's.
That's what Infinite is.
Yeah.
That's what
it's
Infinite
weird it
is.
Took this long, though.
Yeah, well, maybe non-trivial.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. There's a little more SharePoint.
Jeez. It's like when you come in from going on a walk and there's something on your shoe.
Wait a minute.
I didn't talk about the feature pack. Sorry, guys.
It's okay.
But this is really good news also because a lot of people thought SharePoint Server 2016 was the end of the road for SharePoint. And not everybody wants to go to the cloud or can bring every workload to the cloud. And Microsoft knows that, even though they have a big emphasis on hybrid computing with SharePoint, they know there are some things and some businesses that can't put all their stuff in the cloud. So they announced SharePoint Server 2016 this week, and they said if you have software assurance, which is that licensing clause that they give you to ensure you can get the latest updates going 3 years out, you'll be able to get these feature packs for SharePoint Server starting in 2017 that'll give you new features in a more timely manner. So you won't be waiting 3 more years for your next SharePoint. You can start getting some of this new stuff that people are getting in the cloud next year. So that was a good thing. And they also said there will be at least another rev of SharePoint Server, which made the whole crowd go wild, I'm sure.
Yay.
What a bunch of geeks. Not quite as bad as Oracle people, but
are they as bad as SQL Server people?
Well, maybe.
We're going to all get together at SQL Server's 2016, baby.
Yep. SQL Server 2016. Mark your calendars. June 1st.
Party down. Is it Atlanta?
Yes. Oh, no. That's going to be Ignite. That's the show where they definitely will talk more about SQL Server, but that's not till September.
How can I hold on that long?
I know. But you'll be able to get SQL Server 2016 starting June 1st. All versions will be available then to MSDN and volume licensees and any other new customers who want it. The one little tidbit I'll give you on SQL Server 2016 besides the date is I have people ask me, what about the BI versions of SQL Server 2016? So there's an Express version, a Standard, and an Enterprise. The Express is a free version that has all the features in Enterprise, but it's not for production. So if you just want to kind of kick the tires, use Express. But the BI versions are missing in SQL Server 2016. They had them in SQL Server 2012 and 2014. There's something going on there. Microsoft said there's a transition plan, whatever that is. And they're going to tell us what's up pretty soon, but we don't know when. So if you were hoping for that version, it's not there. But all the other ones are going to be there in just under a month. Data lakes, there's just so many things. Stretch database, Hackathon. I mean, we could have a whole Windows Weekly on this.
Could I have my pillow, please?
I'm not going to go into details, but...
But
there's a lot there.
I do think that BI should be pronounced BI.
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 I think data lakes is my Manchurian candidate phrase, where instead of trying to kill somebody, I just fall asleep.
All righty. Cardigan Health.
Which sounds like something like for your sweater, but it's not, right?
Yeah, it's a service plan for a sweater.
I know.
Keep the buttons on.
Yeah. So let's talk about Microsoft gives and takes away. Yes. So this week they bought a company and they sold part of a company. Hmm. So the company they sold is Caradigm, not Cardigan people. Caradigm. Caradigm, get it? Caradigm.
It looks Care like and Paradigm. I'm sorry.
Mushed together.
Caradigm.
Caradigm.
Brother, can you care a dime?
Yeah, like that.
Like that.
Back when Steve Ballmer was still running Microsoft, they had this idea that they were really going to be big in the healthcare field, and they started buying up all these healthcare companies. Then they ended up selling off those companies, and they also took some of the assets they bought, and they turned it into a joint venture with GE Healthcare that they formed back in like 2011. Well, just last month, it turns out they just sold off that business that they were half owners of back to GE Healthcare. Mm-hmm. So they're out of the healthcare, like kind of first party healthcare business, except for what they do around Health Vault, which is their health service and stuff around the band, you know, the Microsoft band. So we don't know how much they sold it to them for. We know that they're just not in that business now anymore. And Caradigm is now 100% owned by GE Healthcare, and Microsoft is out. And what did they buy? They bought an IoT vendor this week in Italy called Solaire. I kept calling them Solaris this week,
but not that.
That'll be in Windows 11.
Yeah, exactly. Solaire is an IoT software vendor. And Microsoft's going to use their technology inside of the Azure IoT suite. So what they do is they make vertical modules for very specific markets. Like they have modules for retail and manufacturing and food and beverage. And they're folding these modules somehow into the Azure IoT service so that they can collect data from all these kinds of IoT systems in these different verticals and then use the IoT suite that they have in Azure to collect the data and let users kind of run predictive analytics and other kinds of services against the data. So obviously, because they're based in Italy, Microsoft can use their offshore cash to buy that company. We don't know how much they paid.
Well. Alrighty. Yep. And finally, it's time for the Bing Insider program. I thought I was already a member of the Bing Insider program. This is new?
I believe so. Apparently, Microsoft has a user voice page for just about everything now. And there was a request on the Bing user voice page about a Bing Insider program where people could get early access to features that were coming down the road to Bing. And Microsoft thought this was a fine idea, given the success they've seen, obviously, with the Windows Insider program, the Office Insider program. And they started one, but it's got a little bit of a twist. You have to fill out a little survey, which is basically demographic information, which is kind of interesting. And then apparently, if you're accepted into the program, you have to agree to a 3-year NDA where you don't discuss publicly anything that you found. Which in
3 years?
My mind,
that's
a long time. Which kind of violates or the concept of an insider program, you know, from what they're doing publicly with Windows and Office. So, you know, if you're really into Bing, and don't mind not talking about what you see, you can join the Bing Insiders program.
The Bing,
or you can at least try to nominate yourself, I guess.
Oh, I'm thinking Bing Rewards. That's not the same.
Yeah.
That's not the same at all. All right, let's take a break. And the back of the book coming up in just a bit. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We are talking Windows and Microsoft and Bing and Xbox and data lakes. And our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. Let's talk cooking. We sent a Blue Apron to Mary Jo Foley. She's a vegetarian, but no problem because Blue Apron has meal plans for every dietary requirement. They make it a breeze to discover and prepare dishes. Here's the thing, you know, end of the day, you're hungry, you're tired, you want to just eat and, you know, watch Game of Thrones.
So you go to what, fast food or a restaurant, and that's not the best for your health. It's not the best for your mental well-being, frankly. Wouldn't it be cool if you got home and they're waiting on your doorstep, everything you need to make a delicious meal, about half an hour, and it's going to smell great, it's going to fill the house with wonderful aromas, and your mouth's going to water, and your family's going to say, wow, you're really amazing. And you'll know how to cook that in future. You'll learn about new ingredients. That's what Blue Apron's all about. Not only will you feel like you know your way around the kitchen, but cooking at home means you're going to eat better, you're going to save money, too. These cost less than $10 a meal. And every ingredient is fresh, never frozen. They come in a refrigerated box. You can get them for two. So if it's just you and your honey, man, by the way, great date night treat. Or family plans, so with kid-friendly ingredients. Go to the website, blueapron.com/twit, and take a look at their menus, and you can tell them what you want. You never get the same meal twice. You'll be cooking amazing stuff you never thought you could cook, and you'll be eating foods you never thought you'd eat, and you will love them. How about, like, okay, here's one I want to do. Spring fragola sarda pasta with crispy oyster mushrooms, chervil, and fennel pollen. I don't know what half those words mean, but it's going to be good. You know it is. Our seared salmon salad with English peas, arugula, and pink lemon. It's like going to the best restaurant in town, except it's your kitchen. You're going to love it. Cook with ingredients like watermelon, radishes, and yuzu juice, and lobnet cheese. And you'll say from now on, oh, I got to have more. I got to get me some of that lobnet cheese, man. That stuff is good. Recipes between 500 and 700 calories. They're well-balanced. They're delicious. This is a great idea. Try it free right now, blueapron.com/twit. You're going to get your first two meals free. Pick from the menu this week. You'll see it on the website. And pick something delicious for yourself, blueapron.com/twit. You will be a brilliant chef in your own kitchen, and that is a great feeling. blueapron.com/twit. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking about windows, and it's my favorite time of the show. We call it the back of the book. Let's start with Paul Thurrott and his tip of the week.
Yes. So I guess I have two tips. So Microsoft Band 2 this month is $75 off. Buy it from the Microsoft Store. If you get it from Amazon, I think a few other retailers, U.S. and Canada, the price is $175 as opposed to the normal price of $250. This is interesting on a number of levels. This is actually the third month in a row in which Microsoft has had a $75 off sale. So I'm kind of wondering if there's anyone out there who hasn't gotten one, wants one but hasn't bought one. But if you're out there, it's there again. And I, you know, obviously with this kind of thing happening month to month, one must wonder whether maybe they're coming out with a new band or whether it's, you know, fading out or whatever. I don't know. It seems a little early for a new band. I think the last one came out in October or November last year, so it's still pretty early. It's still my favorite, you know, watch type wearable. It's more powerful than a fitness tracker, but it does, you know, that kind of perfect balance of functionality, at least for me. So if you're in the market, you check that out. And then just a reminder, as I do every month, it's games with gold time again, beginning of the month. And last month was a blockbuster. This month's just good. The big one for me is Grid 2, which is a great racing game on the Xbox 360. But as you might remember, all 360 games work on the Xbox One as well. So four new games.
Do they look a little blurry like you, or do they... Or do they look good?
They look good. No, they look like they do on the 360, which is good.
That's good.
Yeah, that's a good one. And then as far as picks, I've got actually a couple picks. Doing the duplex mobile app pick of the week. This one was a no-brainer. And also, you can see that in their standings. Facebook released three mobile apps this week for Windows 10. The Facebook app and the Facebook Messenger app are available on Windows 10 for PCs and tablets. And the Instagram app is available on Windows 10 Mobile. And these apps replace whatever apps were there before. They're kind of interesting because they're not actually universal Windows platform apps. They're whatever, I can't remember the name of it, but whatever Facebook's cross-platform technology is for moving their apps around to different platforms, it's based on that technology. I would say on the Windows PC side, Facebook is not super, super different.
I love it that they have a standalone app. They don't have that yet on the Mac. You have to go to m.me So right. This is it's good to have a standalone.
It's good that it's there, yeah. And Facebook Messenger, I believe that's a first on Windows, so that's neat.
Yeah, that's great.
On the phone side, we've had Facebook Messenger for a while. I assume the existing Messenger app is, you know, just whatever it was.
Right.
And then Instagram used to be basically Instagram beta for Windows Phone. Now it's the full blown Instagram for Windows 10 Mobile. So that's cool.
That's great.
You know what's weird about these though? I asked Microsoft point blank, "Are these UWP apps?" And they said yes.
Oh. They said yes.
But then they said, but you should ask Facebook. And I asked Facebook, and they were completely evasive. Like, just didn't even answer the question.
So it is. Somebody on, they don't want you to know.
I don't. So to be a universal, I mean, it's kind of a gray thing, right? I mean, I don't use them enough to know if they take advantage of all these kinds of features. But I would say they do offer lifestyle support. They work with notifications. I mean, they exhibit behavior that I would associate with a universal Windows platform app. That said, you don't have to be a universal Windows platform app to use those features necessarily. So I don't know. My understanding is that they are not true.
They're Osmeta, right? Osmeta, apps.
That's the term. Yeah. I don't know. To the average user, it doesn't matter. I mean, Mary Jo and I had discussed when this first happened because it was one of those fog of war things. You know, Microsoft announced this and they said we are releasing, and there's been a little bit of weird history with the Facebook apps on Windows Phone in particular, where it was Microsoft who didn't first develop them, but first developed the original Facebook app, but they bought the code from whatever company did and then maintained it for a while. And so the thought in the beginning was, well, maybe these, you know, Microsoft did this. In which case, why wouldn't they be talking about the fact that it was a universal Windows platform app? But actually, Facebook later came out with their own announcement, and they said, you know, we made these things. And you know what? I don't think most people care. These are the official apps. I think really the only weirdism is that they're just not universally available across the platform. Why wouldn't all three of these apps be available on PCs as well as mobile? So maybe that happens over time. And just two other picks. Just as we were starting the show, Microsoft alerted me with the fact that Vine, or as I call it, V-Ine, is now available. and this is a universal Windows platform app. I'm old enough that I had asked Raphael what Vine was. I don't.
What?
No,
you
know, come old. On. You knew what Vine was.
No, I'm relax.
Oh,
come on, man.
Oh. Relax.
Okay.
It's not something I care
He's
about.
He's teasing us.
But it's there. I call it V-Ine. What do I know?
Guess what? On that app, is there a Windows Phone version coming? Windows 10 Mobile?
I thought it was already there. Is that not the case?
Nope. There's a Windows. There is a Windows 8.1 Mobile, Where's the Windows 10 Mobile?
Of course, that's where you would want it. you know, if you were creating the videos.
Here's the answer.
Okay.
We have nothing to share at this time.
Oh.
Yikes.
No.
That's not good. That puts it in the placeholders column.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was. I'm sorry. That's not good.
I know.
Shocking. It's shocking.
It's not. It's coming at a future date if it is.
Made a universal Windows platform app that can work in portrait mode on a tablet, why on earth would you not just let it run on the phone? What's the difference?
I don't know.
That's crazy. That's too bad. Okay, I didn't know that. Well, screw Vine. I don't like those guys.
Hey, let me give my own little plug for a brand new Twit app. I think there are several, but this is a new one, the twit.tv media player. You'll find it in the Windows 10 store for Windows Phone, rather. So,
is it a universal Windows platform app?
You asking me something I don't know. I do not know. It doesn't say here, but it's got a 5-star rating from one guy, probably the developer. But anyway, no, it's good. I think I'm just
thrilled. The developer's mother loves it.
And I don't know who the developer is, but I'm just thrilled. Thank you very much for doing it. And so if you've got Windows Phone, there's Dimitri Lee Allen's app, and then there's this new one. Twit.tv media player for 99 cents. It's also on desktop. So it is universal Windows. Okay.
There you go. At least it's cross.
It's on desktop and mobile.
Have one more thing.
I'm dummy because I'm looking at it, and it has a little thing here. It says PC mobile device.
Yes. So it's hard to see that, actually. Both. If you're looking at it in the store, it's not. It's kind of subtle. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So this one's just kind of goofy. I think this is funny. I mentioned earlier this notion of sitting in a cafe in Paris and with my VR headset on and kind of enjoying that. Well, you can do it if you don't mind just doing audio. If you go to hipstersound.com, and I'm not making this up, there's literally a website where you can just, it just plays cafe background sounds so that you can pretend you're working in a cafe if you're just working at home. And one of the choices, by the way, it's free, in the free version anyway, is a Paris cafe.
I love it.
So, but here's the coolest part. There's a little hamburger menu up in the corner. You can add ambient sounds. You can add rainfall. You can add street sounds with traffic and so forth. Yeah, you can get the full-blown cafe experience.
Oh, is there New York traffic?
No, there is a traffic. I don't know if it's New York specifically.
This is a great idea. Or you want to be on a rainy terrace? We could be on a rainy terrace.
You had the rain?
You want to hear some street? Let's do some street sounds.
They have separate volume controls for the ambient sounds and the main sounds. You could probably just hear the rain if that's all you wanted to listen to.
Oh, man. We're in an open-air bistro, baby.
Yep.
I wish we could get a little accordion music in the background. All right, piano. Wow, that's nice.
I know. That's crazy.
What is it? Hipster?
Hipstersound.com.
Let's just leave it on for Mary Jo's segment.
You could also pay them $5 and get access to additional cafes, I guess.
Well, why not, you know? Right now we got
$5, by the way, a price of a cup of coffee.
San Francisco is one, right? Filbert Street in San Francisco. And then the other one is Paris Cafe.
They should have a Boston one where, like, people walk in and they're like, "Hey, Sully, what's up?"
Hey, how you doing? Good to see you there.
Hey, knucklehead.
Did you know that the mockingbird is actually not really a species?
See, the Celtics game, it was pissa.
It was a pissa. It was wicked great.
I wish they had an Amtrak sound. I like the sound when you're on the train.
Yeah, there you go.
You can
That's a good idea.
I discovered those on my Sonos, or is it the Echo? One or the other. I was able to ask for ambient sounds.
Since you mentioned the Echo, by the way, here's a Star Wars tip. If you have an Echo, say, "Alexa, tell me a Star Wars joke." And she's just full of Star Wars jokes today.
Echo, tell me a Star Wars joke. Let's see.
I can't find the answer to the question.
Oh, what? Shut up, you stupid VI.
No, she has a bunch.
Tell me a Star Wars joke.
What degrees do Wookiees get?
What degree?
They get their Chewbaccalaureates.
Oh, that's terrible. What degrees do they get? Chewbacca
Leo, it goes downhill from here.
Alexa, I'm sorry. Echo, tell me a Star Wars joke.
When is the staring contest over? When Jar Jar blinks.
Wow.
If we ever do a Tips and Picks Greatest Hits, this has to be number one.
What about Cortana? Is Cortana telling any?
See, that's the sign that you're a geek is if you celebrate May the 4th, right?
Right.
Yeah.
May the 4th. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you once again, Amazon.
You nailed it.
You nailed it. That corny Star Wars jokes.
Yep.
Apparently, SoundSnap has Amtrak sounds that you can listen to. So
that's cool.
While Mary Jo is speaking.
That seems like a good one for hipster sound, though. That's a good idea.
We should add that. While Mary Jo is speaking, we'll just put her on the train. It's time for Mary Jo and her Enterprise pick of the week. It's an Excel.
Hey, Sully.
I know. I hope I don't have a noisy neighbor on the train like I often have. My Enterprise pick is actually, it's not something I'm recommending or in favor of, but I'm just notifying people about this.
So
there's a... There's a product called the Microsoft Update Catalog. And this is one of two places Microsoft currently makes available for download security updates for Windows. But we found out this week that Microsoft is now going to start making only some of its security updates for Windows available on the Microsoft Download Center and instead is going to refer people to the Microsoft Update Catalog as kind of the definitive place where all of the Windows security downloads will be. Here's the problem. Microsoft Update Catalog is an ActiveX site, so you can only use Internet Explorer to access it. And there has been a lot of speculation about why they're doing this. And, you know, some people are saying maybe they're going to just phase out, you know, putting any updates at all on the download center, or maybe it's because they're going to put home users, tell home users to go to the download center and businesses to go to the update catalog. All I can tell you is Microsoft said they are not commenting on why they are doing this. So I don't know, but, you should be aware of this in case you're somebody who manually gets your updates from the download center. Not all of them are going to be there now.
Did you see that Microsoft is going to replace TechNet and MSDN's documentations with docs.microsoft.com?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is, they say it's old and creaky, 10 to 15-year-old brittle cold base with an archaic publishing and deployment system that was never designed to run in the cloud. Wow.
Yeah, it's called HTML.
Yeah.
So docs, the new docs look nice.
Does it? Docs.microsoft.com. And eventually everything will be moved over there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It looks really good. It's got all this integrated like tutorials and videos and all. Right now it's only a very small subset of products that it's available for, but it's a start.
Nice. Yep. Good.
It's looking good.
It even tells you how long it takes to read.
I know. I saw that. How do they know how fast I read?
Yeah, yeah, I know. Really. It's crazy. Yeah.
I read slow. Slow. All right. And our code name pick of the week.
Okay. So here's a weird one. This is like the stuff that I like the most about my job, which is trying to figure out something, where something came from, right? So last week, Microsoft announces this new Flow service that we talked about. It's like IFTTT, you know, it's very similar to that, right. if this and that.
But it's business only, which is disappointing. You have to have a business email.
Yeah. But it seemed like that came out of nowhere, right?
Right.
It's like, hey, how come we didn't know about this? And here it is. So I started kind of backtracking and said, where did this come from? It actually came from Power Apps, which is this business app building service that Microsoft launched last year. Power Apps had this feature in it called Logic Flows. And I started reading about it. And I'm like, that's it. That's what Flow is. And they just pulled that feature out and they turned it into Microsoft Flow. And yes, in fact, that is what happened. So I kind of went back, looked at the person who was in charge of it, and I even traced it all the way back to this other service that they had in Azure that they called Logic Apps that they were talking about like last spring. And the same guy who did the Flow service and the Power Apps Logic Flows is also the guy who worked on this. So it's kind of a flow of different code names that were related to each other and products that related to each other that they have now turned into the separate Flow service. So if you hear anything about Logic Flows, that is what Flow is. So it's kind of like a code name. It's kind of like trace back the steps. Everyone went to sleep on that one.
I did a terrible thing. I was trying to get Amtrak sounds out of my Echo, and it just played this giant symphonic fanfare. I had to turn off
my
mic.
Oh, no.
She's taking, she has a mind of her own now.
We did not hear that. So
no,
that was good.
I muted it, of course, on my mic. Logic Flows.
Yeah.
So that makes, Logic Flow kind of makes more sense than just
it
Microsoft
does.
Flow. Microsoft Flow, frankly, sounds like it's that time of the month.
I think of that waitress from Alice.
Yeah, Flow. Yeah. You know, Logic Flow makes a lot more. Logic Flows makes a lot more sense. Yeah. All right. But anyway, are they going to, they're going to make a consumer version too, I hope.
I don't know.
There's a number of more and more, if this and that success has led to more and more alternatives like Zapify. And I just got an email about a new one, so. Well, it's time for some beer. What do you say?
Yeah, I say it's time.
Yep.
Overdue.
No longer overdue.
Yeah. My beer pick of the week is from a brewery in San Diego called Modern Times. And we just started getting their beer here in New York recently. I don't think we're going to permanently get it because of the distribution deals, but they make so many amazing beers and they make all styles. So if you see anything from Modern Times, give it a try. This week I got to try a Gozer beer, or goes, however you want to pronounce that. G-O-S-E.
A G-O's,
as Paul might say. It's called Fruitlands, and it's an apricot goes. Ooh. Very nice for spring.
So what is a goes beer?
A Gose beer is, it's a German style, kind of like a Berliner Weiss, very similar.
Yeah.
Usually there is a touch of salt in it, which sounds weird, but it actually is really good. Sometimes a little coriander. It's very tart and light and refreshing.
Sounds wonderful.
It's really good. And this apricot one is amazing, especially because it's not like a heavy cloying kind of apricot. It's just so refreshing. When you drink it, it's like, wow. Just like a fruit punch almost, except it's beer. And it's from Modern Times. San Diego has so many good breweries. We have to find a reason to go to do a Windows Weekly in San Diego.
The company that's they've taken over our studio and building a brewery is from San Diego.
Oh, they are? Who?
Yeah. It's called The Patio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. At least that's the restaurant that they own is The Patio.
Yeah, but it's weird.
They're making a brewery.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's San Diego style. I don't know if they're well-known San Diego beer.
Hmm. There's so many big breweries down there, like Ballast Point and the Brewery and, oh, man, Green Flash. There's just tons of them down there.
They started on the beach. The patio on Goldfinch, the Fireside by the patio Lamont Street, and soon the patio Petaluma. I guess.
That seems like the night. It's like Paris, London, Petaluma.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure why they're inflicting this on us, but there you go.
Dedham. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. That sounds like a good beer, and I'm going to go have one because we are done, ladies and gentlemen. That is the that concludes this week's edition of Windows Weekly for May the 4th, 2016. We do this show with Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com, our favorite Windows guru, Thurrott. Actually, we got two favorite Windows gurus. I shouldn't leave out Mary Jo Foley. She's really kind of Windows, like, breaking news reporter at allaboutmicrosoft.com. You want to know what's going on in Microsoft, that's the place to go. And they come together each week to talk about Microsoft and Windows and all that on our show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 1800 in the UTC time zone, adjust for your own local time. If you want to watch live, you don't have to watch live because we got on-demand audio and video of every show at our website, twit.tv/ww, or wherever you subscribe to your favorite podcasts, including Twit apps everywhere. Now another Twit app on Windows Phone and Windows Desktop. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo.
Thank you, sir.
When are you coming home, Paul? Yeah.
I don't know when, but we'll get together then.
I saw you getting on a plane, and I was a little nervous about today, but now I realize.
So I don't know what I can say about this trip, but I am doing something I've never done before, which is I'm briefing Microsoft.
Oh, nice. They're listening to the people. No, they should listen to the people.
So that's going to be an interesting little hunter has become the hunted moment for me.
Hello, Paul. Welcome.
You should wear your HoloLens when you do it. That would just be perfect.
Was that the sound of a door locking?
Now that we have you, Paul. Perhaps you'd like to visit our pit.
Yes. Right, right. Why is there a tarp? Are you painting in here?
Hey, have a great time doing that, and we'll see. Are you going to be back home next week?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see you back home next week on Windows Weekly. Thank you, everybody. See you next time.